Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and I'm really happy today to have as my guest Michael C. Rupert. Michael C. Rupert is publisher and editor of From the Wilderness Publications and has a website called copvcia.com with the usual triple W in front of it. I'm giving it to you right now at the beginning of the show because you're probably going to want more information. Since there is so much information, Michael C. Rupert has been investigating the CIA for a lot of years. He was in the Los Angeles Police Department and was one of the people, or the person, I'm not sure, but we're not going to get into the details now, but definitely exposing the connections between the CIA, drug smuggling, and the Los Angeles Police Department. And that was some time ago. Since then, he's, as I say, been investigating the CIA. I want to welcome you, Mike, first off.
Thank you.
And the first time that I saw you in person, one time was on a panel in Los Angeles when we were, the indie media was doing interviews around a panel around the issue of drugs. And then the second time was in San Francisco when you were talking about 911 and what was going on. And you have a videotape called Truth and Lies of 911, which I have watched many times very carefully. And I just have a lot of respect for you. And I'm really happy to be here in person with you today. And know that you've been working very, very hard, traveling all around the world, really, since I last saw you, which was in January. And so I'm just going to let you talk about whatever, you know, you most want to talk about, because the time is going to go by in a flash, I'm sure.
Well, thanks, Sue. It's good to be with you. Yeah, we've been very busy. We did 8 cities in 4 weeks, from Sydney, Australia, to 5 cities in Canada and 2 in California. And we've been on the road a lot, still with a very heavy sellout crowds at all of the lectures. And this is good because there's a whole lot of new information on September the 11th that really needs to get out into the mainstream consciousness. I think probably one of the most important things that surfaced recently is after the recent revelations about the FBI so-called mishandling of information, and I do not think it was mishandling, President Bush and Condoleezza Rice and Ari Fleischer all came out with unequivocal statements saying that, we had absolutely no idea that airplanes would ever be used as weapons to attack people. That caught us totally by surprise, and that is a provable, demonstrable lie. And I think that's the place where people need to start in coming out of denial to address the deeper issues of September the 11th. And first is to understand that the government has been lying to them all along, and it's very easily proven. We have documented warnings from the foreign intelligence services of Germany, France, Italy, Russia, all members of the G8, that when taken together show that the Bush administration had been told at the highest levels of CIA and elsewhere that terrorists connected to bin Laden were going to crash commercial airliners into the World Trade Center on the week of September the 9th. That's how specific the warnings were. The Bush position alone falls on it flat on its face because of the fact that at the last G8 summit in Genoa, Italy, which I believe was in April of 2001, the Italians, having broken or intercepted communications, were very aware of aircraft aircraft would be used as weapons. And Hosni Mubarak is quoted in the Los Angeles Times, the president of Egypt, had known that aircraft were going to be used as suicide bombs. And that's why the last G8 conference was ringed with anti-aircraft guns and why they suspended air traffic. And obviously President Bush had to have been aware of these kinds of security measures. In addition, we have The Independent in Britain, a very good newspaper, did a story showing that between October 24 and October 26th of 2000, the Pentagon had actually staged drills preparing for a hijacked airliner being crashed into the Pentagon. So the Bush position on its face is ludicrous, and that's just, of course, one of many other recent developments. And I think what's really important to note is we've had two FBI agents, Colleen Raleigh, of course, of the Minneapolis office that had been investigating Zacharias Moussaoui, and Robert Wright of the Chicago office, who held a tearful press conference at the National Press Club, both talking about how their investigations had been thwarted, blocked, obstructed by senior FBI officials in Washington. And what's very telling about this, and I've read the Colleen Raleigh memorandum, which is on the Time magazine website two or three times now, and I've watched the entirety of the Wright press conference on C-SPAN several times, and you take the notes. And the words used by both Raleigh and Wright were, in describing the actions of superiors at FBI, were words like obstruct, thwart, threaten, intimidate, block, suppress, harass, punish, deliberately obstruct. These are not words describing what the administration is trying to spin as some kind of, oh, golly gee, we're just incompetent. These are words describing deliberate actions. And government apologists who don't want to believe that the government could have had foreknowledge, one in particular has said, well, gee, this conspiracy would have involved so many people they could never have kept it a secret. But the Raleigh memorandum in and of itself belies that fact, because she described the actions of one single supervisory special agent in Washington, D.C., who was the choke point in all terrorist investigations, who was this, the one man blocking everything coming out of Minneapolis, including rewriting of her affidavits, which is unheard of. I'm a former detective. I've written affidavits for search warrants. Nobody will read it, but this guy did. And this was a choke point, and it's clear that just a few key people inside the FBI, CIA, and elsewhere could have served as the choke points to have allowed the attacks to take place without anybody else knowing about it. And that's why the Raleigh memorandum even had a footnote about the FBI agents joking that Osama bin Laden had moles in the FBI who are actually working to protect him. There was more truth to that than anybody would know. Mm-hmm. So clearly it doesn't require thousands of people to have been involved in this. It just requires a few key people. And what's key was that this one special agent in the SIOC, which I believe stands for Strategic Intelligence Operations Center at the FBI headquarters, after having committed all these criminal acts to turn off the investigations, he was actually promoted right after September the 11th.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you have there's just really tons of evidence from what I've from what I've heard you say, and other people. You're not the only one saying all this. So what has been your impression traveling around and keeping track of what gets covered in the media? Where do you think things are at now as we speak? Where are we here? This is the beginning of July 2002.
Well, I've been very aware for a long time, and of course I've been saying clearly that the Bush administration needed another terrorist attack to keep people sufficiently in a state of panic or submission to avoid having them look at the other criminal activities of the administration, that is to say the Vice President's Energy Task Force refusing to disclose its transcripts of secret meetings, the refusal to turn over presidential records, the abrogation of several amendments to the Bill of Rights, ongoing financial criminal activity, which leads us into what is really developing here now in early July, which is a massive economic meltdown all across the country. There are now, I'm preparing a story on this now, and I look at this list, there's about 20 major companies that are now being investigated for fraudulent bookkeeping, and there is a connection to this in 9/11. The last economic bulletin we wrote or published at From the Wilderness for our subscribers was dated September the 9th, 2 days before the attacks. And at that time, I warned of a major economic crash. Now we see companies like Enron, WorldCom, QWest, Tyco, M-Clone, Martha Stewart, Global Crossing, Halliburton, Williams, Motorola, Adelphia, Reliant yesterday announced that it had overstated earnings by $7.8 billion, or almost twice as much as WorldCom. And Fox News today was saying that $600 billion in investor equity is going to be lost this year as a result of financial fraud. Well, this is a sign of a meltdown. And in fact, we just had George Soros in the New York Times criticizing George Bush for the collapse of the world financial system, which is clearly something that is looming, I think, on the horizon. And there seems to be a correlation, although I can't totally explain it, that we had an economic meltdown pending on September the 9th that a lot of people saw coming. Then we had the attacks of September the 11th, and all of the market mechanisms were taken out of whack. And so in this context where the pending crash appears to be several orders of magnitude greater than what was facing us on September the 9th, we might well see other events. I've seen one investment analyst speculate about a possible nuclear exchange between Pakistan and India to provide a cover story for the collapse of the global financial system. On the other hand, I see that this has been coming for a long time, and this appears to operate hand in glove with the globalization that has proceeded at like warp speed since September the 11th.
Well, that's some pretty intense stuff. I want to remind people again that my guest is Michael C. Rupert, publisher and editor of From the Wilderness Publications, and you can go to his website, www.copvcia.com. And there you have a whole, it's laid out all the evidence that you're talking about. Yes. Right now, and a lot more, and the From the Wilderness Publications is a ongoing news. So this is really pretty intense. What do you think? Is there anything that can be done? And what, as I say, what has been, as you move around? You were just in Australia, mm-hmm. Canada. Did you go to the Eastern Europe recently?
No.
I
had been to Moscow. I was invited to cover an economic conference in Moscow in March of 2001, and I was there for about 8 days then, but I haven't been within the last year or so.
Mm-hmm. So what is your impression of the of how people are feeling? Do you get big crowds? I mean, of course, since, in my opinion, we can't believe the corporate media, mm-hmm. do you feel things are at all covered in the media? And you just mentioned Soros. I'd actually like you to say something about him, if you would. There's just so much layers of controversy and around a lot of different things. And that's something that somebody asked me to ask you about. So I want to ask you about George Soros right now, and then we'll get back to the mood of the people.
Well, I recently saw George Soros on the State of the World Economic Forum. I was in New York City at the time. I think this was probably back in April. And you watched him on a dais with Hillary Clinton, Shimon Peres, George Soros, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and one other guy, I believe, from Yale. And they were talking about what was happening in the world economy. And this is clearly the level of economics or wealth above partisan politics in this country. Soros is a known currency speculator. He is a man who is one of the most powerful men on the planet. I do not consider him to be necessarily friendly to my interests. But he recently had a story in the New York Times full of amazing quotes, just blaming George Bush for the destruction of the world financial system. To me, among other things, that was a signal of events that are coming. Soros is known to raid currencies, and the U.S. dollar's role in the pending financial crash is a pivotal role. The dollar probably will tank sometime within the next 4 to 6 months, if not sooner.
Mm-hmm. And back to this, how people are feeling. Have you been speaking about this in your talks and your travels?
Yeah, we've been traveling all over. My last engagement, I'm taking about a month or so off from traveling to devote my time to writing. We have a bunch of new stories coming out soon. Was at the G6B conference, which was the counter to the G8 conference in Kananaskis, Canada, right outside of Calgary. And I was at the University of Alberta when Professor Michel Chossudovsky of the University of Ottawa and I did a joint presentation on September the 11th, and an enormous turnout. The delegates were from 60 countries around the world. And we had 1,200 people turn out for this, which we got standing ovations. People are very hungry for the information, and they really respond when they get when they have access without restriction or filtration to the facts that are available about September 11th and what's happened and why. Charles Sadowski has gone even further in his statements than I. He believes that the foreknowledge issue is a red herring, and that's a quote, meaning that he has shown documentation that the U.S. government actually financed the attacks and was coordinating them. And we refer here to the fact that we know that $100,000 was transferred, wire transferred, on the orders of the head of Pakistani Intelligence Service, General Mahmoud Ahmad, several weeks before the attacks. The FBI confirmed this to ABC News. The Times of India disclosed that it was General Ahmad who had to be approved by the CIA to run the Pakistani Intelligence Service, who's a very close friend of George Tenet, the CIA director, who had ordered the transfer, and he used Omar Saeed Sheikh to actually make the transfer. And Sheikh is the key suspect in the kidnap murder of Daniel Pearl of the Wall Street Journal. Condoleezza Rice was recently confronted at a press conference about the fact that on September the 11th, General Ahmad, the guy who had sent the money to Ottawa, was actually in Washington, had been in Washington since September the 4th, and he had met with Richard Armitage, Deputy Secretary of State, a career covert operative. He had met with the heads of both intelligence committees. He'd met with key officials at the Pentagon. And Condi Rice was asked about the Pakistani or the ISI chief's presence in Washington. And she was asked if she had met with him, and she said, I don't know who he was here with, but he certainly wasn't meeting with me. And what's interesting is that CNN and ABC apparently, I think, sanitized the reference to the ISI chief, General Ahmad, out of their transcripts. They said inaudible. However, we have obtained a copy of the tape in which it's very clear that she was being asked about the ISI chief, General Ahmad. That's a clear smoking gun. So Charles Sadowski is very much of the opinion, as he said in his magazine Global Outreach, that the U.S. government was actually coordinating and financing the attacks.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the most direct statement that I've heard, mm-hmm. actually, that Joe Sadowski makes there, that you're saying, Michael C. Rupert. So do you find that people are just, like, astounded by this idea? Or I guess if they're going to hear you, they must be already interested. If they're going to hear that, they must have a lot of doubts. And do you think this is a kind of a partisan thing? You know, it's people who don't like Bush? Or do you have it? What's your take on the politics of all this?
Well, yes, certainly it's people who don't like Bush, but I have not seen this to be a totally I think it's wrong to couch this in a left-right framework. I don't think that applies. We're getting people from both sides. We're getting people coming to the lectures who don't know or who don't agree and who are leaving having seen the evidence very convinced that they've been lied to. I mean, you cannot not look at the evidence, and that's probably why I've had such a difficult time in some places actually talking about the facts and being sidetracked onto other issues.
Well, Michael C. Rupert, I know from my years of activism and from the research I've done, and I'm definitely not a researcher, but I know that there's just a lot of lying all the time and a lot of subterfuge, and certainly with the control of the media and the distractions of the media. Mm-hmm. And the news is so terrible that you're bringing it's very scary for people, and now you're talking about this economic collapse, which has crossed a lot of people's minds, because it's pretty obvious that things are not going well for most people. Would you say more about that, about the economic collapse and how you see that going and looking?
Well, we're going to have a story out for our subscribers here within a couple of days, but there's a whole bunch of factors in play that have never really come into play in this mix before. There is the overwhelming exposure of absolute corruption throughout the stock market in terms of fraudulent bookkeeping. And there's 20 companies or so that we know about already, major companies, that are guilty of this fraudulent bookkeeping. In my 9/11 lectures, I have also indicated that some of the companies using the same kind of bookkeeping system, it's called pro forma bookkeeping, as opposed to generally accepted accounting principles, which is what Enron used pro forma, which is how they cook their books, and a lot of these other companies are doing the same. But you look at other companies who use that, you see General Electric, the New York Times, AOL, Time Warner, Microsoft, Viacom, which owns CBS, Disney, which owns ABC. I mean, the biggest companies use this system, and we have a stock market that's in a pump-and-dump situation. The prices have been artificially inflated so people can take profit. And we also have now a situation where the last-minute shareholders, mostly pension funds, are going to be left holding the bag.
Mm. Now, that's really going to affect a lot of pension funds. So we're not talking about just people who have a bunch of money in the stock market.
No, some 50 to 60% of all pension fund investments in this country are in the stock market. In some cases, some pension funds have like 80, 90% of their money in stocks. That's very dangerous. Also, since 9/11, the Bush administration has tapped into Social Security for some $900 billion, and they're scheduled to tap in for like $900 billion out of Social Security over the next several years. The president just went into the federal employee retirement system to balance the budget for a debt override this year, just now, to avert a budget crisis. But there's several other factors at play, one of which is the lack of confidence in the dollar, which is now holding parity with the euro. The fact that this economy is dependent on $1.5 trillion a year in foreign investment, which is now starting to flee because they have no faith in the U.S. markets. And the artificially suppressed price of gold. These are things all coming together all at once. And there is an entity called the Plunge Protection Team, which has been documented even in the Washington Post, which intervenes, so to speak, in markets. It involves the Fed chairman, U.S. Treasury, Goldman Sachs, major banks that will pour lots of cash in to save markets from crashing, to save bubbles from crashing. This is on top of a huge debt problem and a derivatives bubble. Well, the Plunge Protection Team, we know, is operated to keep the price of gold down. We saw that in the case of long-term capital management back in 1998, and they've been intervening to keep the price of gold down now. Gold is, in effect, the smoke alarm for an economy that's about to burn up. And one of the ways that they have kept money pouring into the stock markets is by artificially reducing the price of gold. So they're pouring money into that problem, but now they're also pouring money into the Dow Jones to keep that from crashing, and they don't have enough liquidity to do both at the same time. Plus, dollar is facing a huge challenge from the euro and other currencies, and bear in mind that almost every country in the world uses the dollar as its reserve currency, and if foreign governments lose faith in the U.S., that means the dollars will come home, and we could face hyperinflation here.
Hyperinflation, and that's what causes the depression. Like you were earlier alluding to the barrels, the wheelbarrows of money and the depression in the 30s in the United States, that similar thing. And we know it's happening in many other countries, certainly in South America. There's this kind of inflation where people have to take huge amounts of money to buy a loaf of bread, like all the money they made in their lives, practically.
Well, that was actually in Germany, where it took wheelbarrows full of Deutsche Marks.
Right. Sorry, I actually know that. So.
Yeah. But the fact is that if the dollar loses value and foreign governments lose faith in U.S. markets, they stop investing here, they withdraw their capital, they convert to other forms of reserve, which could bring trillions of dollars back home to the U.S., which could, you know, have the dollar sink in value by 50%.
So, Michael C. Rupert, what do you suggest to do about all this? And do you see any movement building? And what advice do you have for people?
Well, yes, I do see a movement building and an awareness building, although there's people have to break first free of ideological and artificial binds that have been placed around their thought processes and their paradigms. They have to get out of the box here. This is not a left-right issue. This is a right-wrong issue. People have got to stop knee-jerk reacting to deal with the fact that the Titanic is about to sink. But I do see a movement growing, and people, that the most common question I'm asked now is, what do we do? And I see one clear battle shaping up that's a right now battle that needs to be addressed. Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, who appears in my video Truth and Lies of 9/11, also with Congressman Ron Paul, a Republican, and Barbara Lee of California. But Cynthia McKinney in Georgia is facing a huge and very serious challenge from a Democratic challenger to trying to unseat her in a primary with an incredibly well-financed machine. And it's clear that they're trying to make an object lesson out of Cynthia McKinney, and she needs help in Georgia. She needs volunteers from anywhere to come and to help her campaign to canvass. She needs donations. She needs letters to the editor. She is symbolically, one way or another, our Braveheart or our champion on September the 11th, because her challengers made it clear that, she has no interest in looking into 9/11 at all and just interested in politics as usual. And if Cynthia McKinney loses, all of the people trying to suppress 9/11 debate will consider her loss to be a referendum around the country. And I think back to the Freedom Riders of the 60s, when people from all over the country went down to the South on the issue of civil rights. I think we need to see that kind of support showing up for Cynthia McKinney in Georgia. She is an incredibly brave woman. Of course, she was vindicated for her statements on KPFA very shortly after she made them by all the revelations. But she needs all the help and support, and that's a huge symbolic case that we need to jump on right now.
Yeah, and of course, I just want to tell people, if you don't know already, which you probably do, that there's always going to be lots of opposition to the truth, and that this is not a new story, and many leaders who have spoken up, especially African Americans, but not only, mm-hmm. have been killed, and so. You know, if you think about it, if you haven't thought about it already, you can expect opposition and expect to be discredited, and you've certainly had your share of that, Michael Rupert.
I've had people try to discredit me. No one has succeeded in discrediting me. That's a very key distinction. I've still got people clamoring for the information, and we still continue to put it out no matter what they throw at it. But this is something you can't get into expecting to have it to... I'll quote Mao Zedong. He said, "Revolution is not a dinner party," mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. And I want to let people know again that you can get this information from the internet by going to www.copv, like Victor CIA, copvcia.com. There you can order from the wilderness to come to you. You can see things that are up on the internet. You can get tapes, including Truth and Lies of 9/11, and I've seen it about five times, and every time I learned something new, which I probably don't remember anyway, but it's, you know, it's just because I've definitely heard people try to discredit you, so I've watched it with just so carefully, mm-hmm. and it's very, you have just lots of evidence, and so I really recommend for people to do that, and I want to thank you very, very much, Michael C. Rupert, and your very, very busy schedule for talking to me today.
So it was an absolute pleasure. God bless you, and I hope to be with you again soon. Keep up the fight.
Yeah. You too, and indeed, my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.